This is a cold war. You better know. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Trita Parsi, who is the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States, and the new book, A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. Welcome to Background Briefing, Trita Parsi.
Thank you so much for having me.
And the president, in a recent interview with NBC, was talking about how difficult it is to deal with Iran, that he basically says knowing who is making decisions at any given time inside Iran is tough. And now we're hearing today that the Iranian parliament have summoned President Ahmadinejad. That's the first time that's happened since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. And there's some doubt as to whether he will show up. There's apparently quite a power struggle going on within the conservative camps. Do you have any inside knowledge, Trita, of what the president's referring to?
Well, I think President Obama is quite correct. We know very little about how decisions in Iran are being made. We have an understanding that the circle of people around Khamenei who are critical to the important decision-making have become a smaller circle. It's also become a more hardline circle. But beyond that, we know very little. And it's not necessarily very surprising. The combination of the fact that the Iranian system is not a transparent democratic system and the fact that we don't have any diplomatic relations means that it's going to be very difficult to know how decisions are being made over there. Part of the purpose of diplomacy is actually to shed more light and transparency on what the thinking of the other side is, how they're making their decisions, how they view their interests, and how they view themselves in the region. We oftentimes forget that, but that is actually one of the critical benefits, takeaways of having some sort of a diplomatic relationship or having negotiations with the country.
So in terms of, though, of paralysis or division at the top, my understanding is that President Ahmadinejad and his supporters want to reduce the influence of the ruling clerics and the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. And on the other hand, apparently the parliament is dominated by Khamenei's supporters, including the speaker, and they're apparently summoning Ahmadinejad to answer questions about the sacking of the intelligence minister and the foreign minister. And apparently, when the Ayatollah Khamenei decided to overrule the president and ordered the reinstatement of the intelligence minister, supposedly that enraged Ahmadinejad to the point where he stayed away from government meetings for 11 days. So, give me a sense of this kind of brinkmanship, because the elections are coming up in March, aren't they, next month?
Yes, and I think the elections coming up in March is a critical point here. You have a situation in which the next parliament, the configuration of the next parliament, may actually end up completely finishing Ahmadinejad and his camp as a political force in Iran. And prior to that, the existing parliament, led by Larijani, who is one of Ahmadinejad's key rivals, is obviously going to increase pressure and do everything he can to undermine Ahmadinejad in order to guarantee or increase the chances of the Ahmadinejad faction losing out big time in the next parliamentary elections in a couple of weeks.
So that presupposes then, well, in a normal political environment, Trita Parsi, that would suggest that the right wing has come back. But I take it that what's going on here is that the center and the left are not participating. Is that what's happening?
Well, they this is not a fight between the left and the right wing, or even the center and the right wing. This is a fight between various parts of the same right wing. It's somewhat similar, as every once in a while you do have some fights within neoconservative circles here in Washington, D.C. The political spectrum in Iran has shrunk considerably over the last 10 years, but particularly after the 2009 election scandal. So as a result, the fights that we're seeing are increasingly amongst the hardliners themselves, because there's very few non-hardliners left within Iran's political elite that actually have any particular political relevance right now.
So in terms of the broader the politics of Iran, the rest of it simply shut out. And is that a factor of how the clerics have always chosen who gets to a run in the first place? In other words, have they narrowed it down to the point where only extreme conservatives can even run for parliament?
That was how they did it in the past. But this time around, it's even further so, because now certain parties are not permitted to run, and already by having essentially politically assassinated a lot of political figures that are not falling into the right-wing camp, you actually have pacified that element of the political spectrum. Those people are not even running. In fact, many of the reformists, some of the key reformists, circles have called for a boycott of the elections because they don't see any point in participating in this any longer.
So, again, I'm speaking with Dr. Trita Parsi, who is the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States. And his new book is A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. And in terms of diplomacy, there seems to be, there were indications that there were meetings that took place recently in Turkey that Larijani showed up at. And there was a sense at the time, that was quite recently, that perhaps both the Iranian leadership and the leadership in the White House had realized they were staring into the abyss and they wanted to pull back a little bit. But things have been ratcheted up since then, with the president announcing more sanctions on Iran's central bank. Where is this game? I'm trying to get a sense of this triangular game that's going on between Iran, Israel, and the United States. And is it a situation where the Israelis have forced the United States into toughening the sanctions because they threaten a war, which would be a catastrophe? Or on the other hand, are the U.S. using the threat of Israel doing something catastrophic to have leverage against the Iranians? How's this game being played, to your mind?
Well, I think you described it quite well, and I would add to it that the United States, the Obama administration itself, has also used the threat of an Israeli military attack in order to strong-arm other countries to agree to sanctions that they, under normal circumstances, would not agree to. But I think while that tactic worked to a certain extent, even with Russia and China, that is now past us. There's not any longer a clear consensus within the P5+1 on how to deal with Iran. And I think the disagreements, the very stark and angry disagreements within the P5 on how to deal with Syria, has also taken a poll on the ability to muster a consensus on Iran. We are going to see in 2012 a year of conflict management. The Obama administration's ability to muster or even pursue a diplomatic breakthrough is very limited. Any expectation on diplomacy has to be quite moderate. But if they can continue to ensure that there isn't any war in 2012, then perhaps after the U.S. elections, after the Iranian presidential elections in 2013, there will be some greater flexibility for a diplomatic effort. But that, even under those circumstances, will require a tremendous amount of political courage. And to be frank, we are not seeing particularly much political courage in Tehran or in Washington right now.
Well, back to what you were saying earlier, though, Trita Parsi, that in effect, what's happening now in terms of this internal wrangling amongst the ruling conservative elite in Iran is quite soon will be the ringing the Ahmadinejad's death knell, that the supreme leader is essentially going to make him politically irrelevant. So that would assume then that at least what the president's saying, what he said on Sunday, that he doesn't know who to talk to over there, that would get clearer. But I spoke recently with an Iranian human rights activist who made the case that the supreme leader and the clerical establishment have so little legitimacy and that in many ways they want chaos, or if not war.
I think certainly there is a certain degree of a desire for a managed chaos, particularly when they are suffering from such domestic legitimacy deficits as they currently are. This regime does have a legitimacy crisis right now. However, I'm a little bit skeptical about the argument that they want war. If they want war, it's not particularly difficult to get a war right now. You can get a war extremely easily. So I'm not so convinced by that. I think there is much more of a situation in which the elite is politically paralyzed, cannot make decisions on such important issues such as the U.S. and Iran, and a phenomenon that exists both on the Iranian and on the American side, which is that after having essentially pursued enmity or some level of animosity for 30 years, that is what the two sides are most comfortable with. That's what they know how to do. That's their comfort zone. To muster the political will to take the risk of trying something different is a little bit too much for them, particularly under the circumstances in which the elite is at war with itself, more or less.
But you mentioned a little while ago acrimony amongst the permanent five, Dr. Tridipasi, over Syria, where the U.S. UN representative called the Russians' behavior disgusting and wasn't much less disgusted with the Chinese as well. So just in terms of, it does seem, and the president has said this and so has the Secretary of State, that Assad is on the wrong side of history and he'll eventually go. Assuming that is the case, Iran clearly does not want to lose this relationship and see Assad go down. So going back to that earlier question about how much they want war, if there was a war against Iran, that would immediately end the support for the anti-Assad Syrian regime, because they could not be seen as siding with Israel. So again, I don't want to be conspiratorial, but would certainly be the consequence of a war, right?
It could potentially be, but it's an odd argument, because it would mean that you would risk something that is tremendously valuable to you in order not to lose something that is of secondary value to you. So it still doesn't add up, in my assessment. I think from the perspective of the Iranian government, they're probably very concerned about losing Assad. But what they're mostly concerned about is that there would be some sort of a smooth regime change in Syria that would turn Syria into a pro-Saudi, pro-Western country. That's probably their nightmare scenario. The most likely scenario, as things are developing right now, is that Assad would continue his brutal repression of the, particularly the Sunni population. It would end up in some form of a civil war. It would be complete chaos in Syria, somewhat similar to Iraq a couple of years ago. And within that, the Iranians would maintain a certain level of influence over at least certain parts of Syria. But there would also be an influx of Saudi, Turkish, American influence in Syria as well. But Syria would suffer tremendously, under most of these different scenarios. I mean, one really must have a lot of sympathy for the Syrian people right now, because they are stuck not only in a civil war, not only in under the repression of the Assad government, but also in a geopolitical context in which they have very little say in and then very little influence over.
So, Dr. Trita Parsi, again, co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States, and his new book just out is A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. I spoke yesterday with Flint Leverett, who was on the National Security Council under President Bush. He quit, I believe, over the intransigence of the Bush administration, which was essentially being run by Dick Cheney, that at the time of the Iraq War in 2003, the Iranians made an offer to the United States to basically put everything on the table, including the nuclear portfolio. And they were quite concerned that after Saddam had been toppled, maybe they were going to be next. And this was a real opportunity to open a dialogue. And clearly, given what's happened since, in retrospect, it looks like one of the greatest acts of folly. But apparently, it was torpedoed by the neocons and by Dick Cheney, who apparently just ran rings around Bush. He didn't basically know what was happening in terms of foreign policy. Leverett quit over this, and he basically is appalled at what's happening, and like a lot of people, thinks that we're on a collision course towards war. You keep holding out the possibility of diplomacy, and your book is about Obama's single roll of the dice, where he made some efforts but didn't follow through. Do you think that what's happening now is going to get people's attention? Because clearly in an election year, any kind of war, whether it's a small war or a large war in that region, is going to affect the price of gasoline and President Obama's election chances.
Well, I do agree that we are in a situation in which more people may realize the tremendous folly and danger of not pursuing serious, sustainable negotiations. Because if we continue to gravitate towards a confrontation with Iran, which we currently are, then and then the risk of that continues to grow towards the point in which it at some point potentially could become inevitable, then, you know, it's going to be a very dangerous situation and a very sad situation, because we will then have gone into war without having first exhausted diplomacy. And that is quite unfortunate, to say the least.
So did you, the New York Times on Tuesday had a front page story about trying to gauge the mood inside Iran. And what was striking about it was, on the one hand, the average Iranian and the middle class and working class people are really suffering as the currency is devalued. Apparently, members of the elite were able to change their dollars at very favorable exchange rates before the real collapsed. But what was clear, at least to me, from that article was how distant the nuclear portfolio is from the average Iranian. That they simply don't understand why it is such a big deal. What's your sense of that?
I do agree in the assessment that, you know, the average Iranian doesn't wake up in the morning and thinks about the nuclear program. What is odd, though, is that some commentators have then interpreted that to mean that they actually don't support it. And those are two very, very different things. It's one thing to say that, look, this is not their top priority. It's a different thing to say that actually, as a result, they don't support it. I think there is support for the program. In fact, most analysts with access to Iran do agree that there is support for it. But I think the Iranian population is quite perplexed that the West has now pursued a policy that really is putting a tremendous amount of pressure on the Iranian population, even though the West does know that the Iranian population at large really does not agree with the government and really does not have the ability to change the government's policies. Why is the Iranian people being punished in the middle here?
Well, just in closing, Dr. Trita Parsi, there's another wild card in this, of course, and that is Netanyahu, the Israeli leader, who it's no secret he has disdain for for President Obama. It's no secret that he's close to Eric Cantor and the Republicans, and it does seem in this current election where the so-called front-runner Romney is getting beaten up and looking weaker and weaker, it would seem that that the best chance the Republicans will have for winning back the White House is if Obama is stuck with a war in the Middle East that he doesn't approve of, and he's on the sidelines while the Republicans are screaming to support our closest ally Israel, and already they're running on a ticket of who they're stepping over each other to be the first to bomb Iran. So that's I know it's almost treasonous to suggest treason in the U.S. government, in the context of the U.S. government and electoral politics. But it did happen with the under Kissinger, or before Kissinger came in, over the peace talks with the Vietnamese, where Madam Chiang Kai-shek, at Kissinger's behest, got the South Vietnamese delegation to walk out. And that affected Humphrey's re-election chances and helped Nixon. And Gary Sick, who was the National Security Council guy on Iran throughout the hostage crisis, believes that there was some kind of deal made between elements in Iran and the Reagan administration, who won largely because Jimmy Carter was twisting in the wind. I know it's a long-winded question, but is it possible that Barack Obama could find himself in Jimmy Carter's shoes?
I think the president knows quite well that if there is a military conflict with Iran, there may be a bit of a rally around the flag type of effect to begin with. But the most important effect is that the cost of oil will skyrocket, which will then have an immediate impact on gas prices in the U.S., which means that it will reach $4, $5, $6, $7 a gallon. When gas prices go up, job creation goes down, which then means that his success on the economy will be absent. And that is the most important decisive factor for his reelection. If the economy is bad, if he has an unemployment rate above 8%, then he's not going to get reelected. So it does seem as if any type of a military confrontation would most likely be to the detriment of Obama's election bid.
Well, the Secretary of Defense, only a few days ago, speaking to the Washington Post, said that he's concerned that the Israelis will attack Iran in the spring.
And I think many people in the White House and Obama administration share that view. In my own conversation with some of them, they expressed deep concerns about the likelihood that the Israelis may do something that would be quite detrimental to the United States. The question is why it's so difficult for the Obama administration to really put down its foot and say, don't do something that will hurt America's interests, as well as put American soldiers in harm's way.
Well, we will have to wait and see. It's extraordinary in a way that we even having this conversation, to think that the superpower is so helpless, but apparently that is the case. I thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Tridipasi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Tridipasi, who is the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States. His new book is A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The free.
time.